It's good to be back. I've just had a good two-week break. It really is. I mean, this morning we just had the best time ever. We had an old friend, Richard Gordon. Who remembers Richard Gordon? Yeah. Dreadlocks, Savage, John the Baptist. But sheesh, God has graced that guy to introduce people to Jesus. And he was such a blessing. He had two young ladies with him from the Bethel School of Ministry. They were also a blessing to us. And it was really cool. This morning, just pumped. It was cool. So I'm energized, feeling good. I feel good. I may not sound good, but I do feel good. So excuse the voice. I want you to picture yourself. You own a car. You're a driver. So regardless of whether you own a car or not, hypothetically speaking, you own a car. Anyone seen the movie Yes Man? Fairly old Jim Carrey movie. I'm going to steal a scene out of that movie. And whether you've seen the movie or not, doesn't matter. You own a car. You walk into your car. You're just about to get in your car, and a man who's homeless and obviously in great need approaches you and says, "Sorry, brother. Sorry, sister. Which direction are you going?" And you say, "Well, I'm going that way." He says, "Oh, please, do you mind if I get a lift?" He says, "Oh, cool. Well, I've got a car. I'm able. Hop in." He's like, "Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much. Get in the car. All right, where are you going?" "No, I'm going same direction." "Okay. Cool. All right, well, like, where do you want to hop out?" "I just say, you're like, but I was kind of done. You're like, that's my turn off, you know?" "No, no, just same direction. Just keep going." Looking at the petrol gauge. "I'm in a car. If he had to walk, it would take him so much longer. Yeah, I can go a bit further." So, okay, a little bit, carry on. "Says, oh, do you have a phone on you by any chance?" "Yeah, I've got a phone on me. Can I borrow it?" "Okay, cool, yeah. Yeah, have a phone." "Thank you so much. Phone. "Yeah, how's it, my chum? Talking. Laughing, talking. I'm like, where do we stop here? Like, where, and it's my phone. "Yeah, it's, wada. Eventually, off the phone, puts the phone down. "All right, cool. This is good." You're like, "I should hope so." All right. Then he wants to get out the car. He says, "Hey, I know, so sorry. Do you have any cash on you?" So you're like, "Well, obviously. You know what I mean?" So take out your wallet. In your wallet, you've got a 50 rand note and you've got a 100 rand note. And so you open up your wallet and that 50 rand note is going, bing, 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 bing. And he, being the kind of gentleman he is, looks. And he says, and you give him the 50. He says, "Yeah, but what are you doing with that 100 rand? Do you like need that?" He's like, "Okay, well, I suppose if I give him the 100 rand, I'm not going to have to take my kids out of school. We'll probably make it. It might scrape, but we'll probably make it to the end of the month if I give him the 100. It's probably going to mean more to him than to me. So, okay, here we go." There's a shot. "Thanks." Takes your money and he disappears and off you go. There's a point in that story where even though you're able to do all of these things, your willingness and your ability start to become incongruent. They start to part, right? "I'm able to do this, but man, you are irritating me and you are so offensive and you are in my space like you cannot believe and you are taking advantage of me." So we have this bent because that's how we are. We, as Christians, that line should stay together longer than most. But all of us have a point where it starts to go, "You're really grinding me up the wrong way." And so we have that expectation sometimes of other people. And so there's a man in the Bible in Mark chapter 1. He's a leper. And he has this expectation of Jesus. He knows Jesus is able, but he's not so sure if Jesus is willing to heal him. So turn with me to Mark chapter 1, and we're going to read from verse 40. But do you ever feel like that? Tonight you might feel like that. "God, I've seen you move. You move the mountains, and I believe I'll see you do it again in other people's lives. I've no doubt that other people in this church are going to see more miracles. You do, they're going to see your goodness. But man, I don't know if you're willing to do it for me." And so here we have a man with leprosy. Mark 1, verse 40. A man with leprosy came to him and begged him on his knees, "If you are willing, you can make me clean." Filled with compassion, Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man. "I am willing," he said. "Be clean." Immediately the leprosy left him and he was cured. Jesus sent him away at once with a strong warning. "See that you don't tell this to anyone, but go show yourself to the priest and offer the sacrifices that Moses commanded for your cleansing as a testimony to them." Instead, he went out and began to talk freely, spreading the news. As a result, Jesus could no longer enter a town openly, but stayed outside in lonely places. Yet the people still came to him from everywhere. I don't want to focus on the negative aspects. I want to focus on what we can learn from this man who had leprosy, not from his good stuff. We're not going to focus on his bad stuff. Okay, we're going to be quite gracious people tonight. So, what did leprosy mean back then? You had to be at least 50 feet away from any other person. All right. So what does that mean for family life? What does that mean for work life? What does that mean for church life? So leprosy wasn't just a medical issue. It was clearly a medical issue, but it wasn't just that. It was a spiritual issue. If you look in the Old Testament, there were times where people believed that leprosy was a sign of the judgment of God on people. There were times where people were punished with leprosy. And we'll actually have a look at one of those scenarios. So, but it was a spiritual issue. And then obviously, it was a social issue because you couldn't be close to anyone. You had to, if people were coming near, you had to shout, "Unclean, unclean!" So they couldn't come like too close and kind of into your radius, because then you would have disobeyed the law. And so you had to warn everyone. So it was a social issue. And then you couldn't work a proper job because you couldn't get close to anyone. So it was an economic issue. So when this guy comes to Jesus and he says, "If you are willing, you can make me clean," he understands that it's not just about Jesus healing his physical body. He understands that, hey, I'm not entitled to this. This could very well be the judgment of God on me, and God might not be willing to heal me. And the Hebrew understanding of humanity, it's all one. It's all connected. And so Jesus does heal him, and he has compassion on him, and then he sends him off to the priests to go make the sacrifices, because Jesus isn't just interested in his physical healing. Jesus wants to heal the whole person. And so part of that thing of going to the priests and offering the sacrifices and the priests saying, "Stamp, you are healed. Therefore, everyone sees you as healed. You do not have to stay 50 feet away from everyone. You do not have to shout unclean and keep labeling yourself as unclean. You are today clean, my friend. Your life is forever changed. Your economic status has changed. Your social status has changed. Your spiritual status has changed. And your medical status has changed." And so Jesus wants to heal the whole person. So he doesn't just say, "Cool, carry on with life. Now at least you don't have leprosy anymore." But actually, he wants to see him restored in every area. And it's the same for us. Jesus wants to heal all of us. I speak often about the shalom of God. It's being whole in every area of our lives. It's being free in every area of our lives. And if you remember yourself as a child trying to learn how to put shoelaces into a shoe. So not do your shoelaces, but actually put the shoelace in. And you imagine you would put it in, cross. And on the one side, the shoelace would be like that long, and the other one would be like that long. And every time you'd pull, and you'd get this one right, then that one is like short. And so in our lives, often there's this imbalance. And economically, we're thriving, we're doing super well. But all of a sudden, we become so focused on that our relationships start to break up, or our spirituality starts to break up because we start to worship our money. Or whatever else. We pull the string and, oh wow, we got so much slack. But all of a sudden, we're not free in these other areas. And Jesus, the whole time, that's why Paul writes, he says, work out your salvation with fear and trembling. And it is God who wills and acts in you according to his good purpose. God is pulling this string and pulling that string and pulling that string and trying to set us free in every area. And sometimes we can be crying, "God, where are you? I'm my economic status is I'm nowhere. But actually, God is busy setting you free in another area of your life, and you're not aware of it. He's very present, and he's working in you according to his good purpose. And so this guy, he knew Jesus could. He had seen Jesus do all sorts of miracles in other people's lives. But he just wasn't convinced. So he's like, is this the judgment of God on me? Is Jesus, maybe this is me, I've got to pay my dues. And so he says, he's not entitled. But you might be here tonight, you might be thinking, is God willing? Will he make me clean? Will he clean up the messy situation that I find myself in? Everything like a leper, everything that I seem to touch, everyone that I seem to touch, every relationship, I seem to make it unclean. Why in my life does dirtiness, does uncleanness follow me? Why in my workplace do I get involved in a deal and it just turns pear-shaped? Can Jesus restore my messy situations? And can Jesus take everything that I touch and the uncleanness that I project onto everything around me, and can he turn that around? See, a leper would touch something and make it unclean, but when Jesus touches the leper, he reverses it, and his cleanness is transferred to the leper. He knows he's undeserving. He has an understanding of the judgment that he deserves. He has an understanding of that. He's not entitled to Jesus healing him. And that is always the start of our journey from brokenness to wholeness. Listen to me. We are not entitled to one blessing from God. We are not entitled to salvation in the slightest. We are not entitled to his love, his mercy. That's the very point of mercy. You're not entitled to it. The start of your journey from brokenness to wholeness is understanding that. We do not deserve it. And then he says, if you are willing. So he submits himself to the will of Jesus. Much like Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, not my will, but yours be done. But there's this thing of, Jesus, I know you're able, but if you choose not to, that's okay. If you choose not to, what if he chooses not to? What if for some reason, the thing you're crying out for over and over and over again, what if he's not coming through for you? Do you turn your back on him? Do you, like a sulky child, turn your back and say, I deserve this, Jesus. Why aren't you doing it? Or do we have this understanding that actually any goodness that we see of God is purely based on his mercy and his grace? We don't deserve any of it. While we're on the subject of clean and unclean, things that we touch being holy and unholy, and what effect do we have on the people and the situations around us? Do we make them holier? Do we clean them up? Do we bring order? Do we bring righteousness? Or do we actually bring fruitlessness and chaos and separation? The disciple Peter in Acts chapter 10, he's on the roof of the house of a guy he's staying with, Simon, his name's Simon. And it seemed like, I don't know about the architecture, but it seemed like they often used to go on the roof to pray. And so Peter is on the roof and he's praying, and he's hungry, and food is being prepared downstairs for him. And all of a sudden he has this vision from heaven, and he sees this kind of like the sheet being lowered. And he all of a sudden sees all these different types of animals. And so in the Jewish culture, you would have very definitely animals you could eat, clean animals, and you'd have animals that you could never eat. They were unclean. If you ate them, you were unclean. And so he sees all these different animals, reptiles and all sorts of things, pigs. Can you imagine? Peter is an adult. He had never had pork crackling his whole life. I mean, God have mercy on him. What on earth did he do at Christmas time? So he's gone his whole life, believing that this is clean and I can touch that, but this is unclean and I cannot touch it. Whether I want to or not, I cannot touch it. And a voice from heaven says, get up, Peter, kill and eat. And he says, Lord, you know that I've never let anything unclean touch my lips. And God says this in verse 15. It says, Peter, do not call impure what God has made clean. And so Peter has this understanding, and it's been taught to him. It's literally in the laws of his people, in God's laws to his people. So he has ingrained in his mind that this is clean and this is unclean. Now, this was about more than food. What was happening was God was preparing Peter, because there were about to be some men that would come to the door to call Peter to go to a man named Cornelius's house, and Peter was going to lead Cornelius and his whole family to Jesus and baptize them, and they would be filled with the Holy Spirit. Now, if those men had come to Peter before Peter had that vision, he would have refused them. Why? Because they were Gentiles, meaning they were not Jews. And so what God was revealing to Peter was, actually, this gospel of mine, it's not just for the Jewish people. It's not just for this chosen people. Actually, I choose everyone, all people. Everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. And I find it fascinating that Rich Gordon mentioned this. I was like, this morning. And so because Peter has this revelation, everything that he's been taught, his whole mindset, his whole life has been this way. This is what God says. This is what God says. All of a sudden, God sets him free and expands his mind to be able to understand, actually, salvation is for these people. And this is a glorious moment where I can lead these people to Jesus and to God, and they can be restored. The point of what I'm saying is, we spend our lives calling things clean and unclean, and we call ourselves clean or unclean. And what I felt genuinely for some tonight is that God will say to you, when you are saying to yourself unclean, and people have called you unclean your whole life, and so in your mind you've got that, this is what God says, this is what God says. God says, do not call impure what I have made clean. If you are here tonight and the word of yourself is unclean, God says, do not call unclean what I have made clean. And so the grace of God always extends further than we can imagine. For Peter, the grace of God was for the Jews. And all of a sudden, there's this hungry man, hungry for God, full of faith, desiring this gospel, desiring salvation. And he wants to bring everyone that works for him and everything and all of his family to God through Jesus. And he comes looking for Peter. And Peter would have rejected him. But actually, God opened up his mind to say, actually, my grace extends way beyond what you've ever imagined. And so today, tonight, I want to tell you, the grace of God extends beyond what you can imagine. Do not call unclean what God has called clean. So how do we need to position ourselves for Jesus to look at our mess and say, I am willing, be clean? How would you like to hear those words tonight? Rich got up here a little earlier and he said, think of a situation, that thing that you're crying out to God for. You've seen him do it in someone else's life. Can you trust him to do it in your life? Imagine for that thing tonight, you heard the words from Jesus, I am willing, be clean. And he took that thing and he turned it around and he redeemed it, beauty from the ashes. So I want to learn some lessons from another leper. All right, can we do two lepers in one night? Tricky. We're going to go to two Kings, Old Testament, 2 Kings chapter 5. We're going to read a fairly lengthy passage. We're going to read from verse 1 to verse 15. And then I might throw some comments in about the end of the passage. 2 Kings 5, verses 1 to 15. Now Naaman was commander of the army of the king of Aram. He was a great man in the sight of his master and highly regarded, because through him the Lord had given victory to Aram. He was a valiant soldier, but he had leprosy. Now bands from Aram had gone out and taken captive a young girl from Israel, and she served Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, if only my master would see the prophet who was in Samaria, he would cure him of his leprosy. Naaman went to his master and told him what the girl from Israel had said. By all means, go, the king of Aram replied. I will send a letter to the king of Israel. So Naaman left, taking with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 sets of clothing. The letter that he took to the king of Israel read, with this letter I am sending my servant Naaman
to you so that you may cure him of his leprosy. As soon as the king of Israel read the letter, he tore his robes and said, am I God? Can I kill and bring back to life? Why does this fellow send someone to me to be cured of his leprosy? See how he is trying to pick a quarrel with me. When Elisha, the man of God, heard that the king of Israel had torn his robes, he sent him this message. Why have you torn your robes? Have the man come to me and he will know that there is a prophet in Israel. So Naaman went with his horses and chariots and stopped at the door of Elisha's house. Elisha sent a messenger to say to him, go, wash yourself 7 times in the Jordan, and your flesh will be restored and you will be cleansed. But Naaman went away angry and said, I thought that he would surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord, his God, wave his hand over the spot and cure me of my leprosy. Are not Abana and Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than any of the waters of Israel? Couldn't I wash in them and be cleansed? So he turned and went off in a rage. Naaman's servants went to him and said, my father, if the prophet had told you to do some great thing, would you not have done it? How much more then when he tells you, wash and be cleansed? So he went down and dipped himself in the Jordan 7 times, as the man of God had told him. And his flesh was restored, became clean like that of a young boy. Okay, what are some lessons for us out of this little passage? Firstly, not in my notes, but you can see there, he goes, the king recognizes earthly authority, so he writes to the other king. And the king, who is clearly willing, but clearly unable to do anything, tears his robes and says, what do you expect from me? Or is this are you being sarcastic? Or are you trying to pick a fight? Elisha, who clearly has heavenly authority, can do something about this. So that's the first thing to understand. So often we look to earthly governments, earthly solutions, but actually they have no authority to overcome, to give us wellness in every area of our lives, to make us whole. Jesus has heavenly authority, and only in him can we ever be fully whole. Only he is the answer to every question that we can have. So Naaman, who's obviously an influential man, a significant man in Aram, and you see obviously here he's got leprosy, but he's a commander of the army, so obviously different culture, different expectations, but he's told, go and find this prophet and you can be clean. So he goes, and with his importance and kind of his view of himself, he's expecting this big show. He's expecting the prophet to come out and wave his hand over him and do a big trick, and all of a sudden, in the name of my God, be healed. That doesn't happen, does it? Elisha doesn't even come out to him. Sends a messenger, just go tell him to wash in the Jordan River 7 times. He doesn't really like that. He got a bit angry. You see, there's no special treatment. There's at the foot of the cross, there is no one that is more special than anyone else. At the foot of the cross, we are all stricken with poverty. We are all in absolute dire poverty at the foot of the cross. And as we look up at that cross, all of us, everyone that looks up at that cross is wealthier than anyone could ever be on this planet. All of us. But there is no one, again, Rich Gordon said it this morning, God is no respecter of persons. If he doesn't look down on you because more than he looks down on anyone else, he doesn't look up to you more than he looks up to anyone else. It's all level. At the foot of the cross. But Naaman comes and he's like, I deserve more than this. I deserve a bit more attention than this. I want something spectacular. And he gets upset. Sometimes when God does stuff in our lives, it's mundane. It's through the mundane. And we want him to break in and do something that is clear. And sometimes we just need to trust God and follow him in the mundane, step by step. Then he gets a bit upset. Because he's like, the Jordan River, I must go wash in the Jordan River. That pigsty. Says, the rivers of Damascus are way cleaner than the Jordan River or any river in Israel. Why don't I just go washing those rivers. I can tell you, he could have gone to those rivers and washed and scrubbed and washed and scrubbed 1,000 times, 1,000 days over and over, and he would still have leprosy. Paul writes to the Corinthians, and he says, the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing. The cross makes no sense. He looked at this Jordan River, and he said, you're saying, I must go wash in this river, and I'm going to be clean. This is going to make me clean, not a chance. When people today look at the cross of Jesus, and they look at a Savior who came and submitted himself to death, they say, how can my salvation be in this? But they can look 1,000 times over elsewhere and they will never find their salvation. They will never find their wholeness. We can say, but Lord, we have followed you into the Jordan. See, what we need to understand about the Jordan River is that in Joshua chapter 3, that's the river where God has commanded Joshua to lead his people into their inheritance. So Moses led them through the Red Sea and God parted the waters to take them out of slavery. And then in Joshua chapter 3, through the Jordan River, is this chosen place where God would again part the waters for his people to enter into the inheritance. And that's the place where Joshua would take 12 stones and build an altar of remembrance to God. A great victory in the history of God's people. Fast forward, Matthew chapter 3, John the Baptist baptizing hundreds and hundreds of people. All of a sudden, the Lamb of God himself, Jesus Christ, walks in and says, this must be done to fulfill all righteousness. Jesus Christ, the Son of God, gets baptized where? At the Mshlonga Lighthouse? No. That's where I got baptized. In the Jordan River. Clearly, God is in the Jordan River. Clearly, there's something significant about, actually, there's the presence of, this is the river that God has chosen. You may look everywhere else. They may look cleaner. They may look more beautiful. They may look to you like better saviors, but they cannot save you. But where God is your answer. You might say, we followed you. We followed you for salvation. We followed you for deliverance. We followed you for wholeness. But the place I'm in, this Jordan River, it doesn't look like anything. The place I'm in, I don't see your breakthrough. I'm still in need. I'm still, where are you, God? Are you here? I'm not seeing it. You know the feeling, I don't know if you've ever had the experience, where you're in a beautiful destination, but you're on your own. And you don't have anyone to share it with. And there's almost like a grief in your heart that you actually, you're like, wow, if only there was someone I love that I can share this moment with. And then you have memories of sitting late night with your best friends at a petrol station. And you're having the best time ever. But you're at a petrol station, right? And your heart is full because you're sharing actually awesome moments with friends. And you're making memories. We can look at situations. We can say, wow, that's really beautiful. That's really beautiful. But it's actually not about the place. It's about the person that is with you in the place. And I want to say that you might look at the Damascus rivers and say, but God, take me out of where I am now. Put me there. Put me there. Rip me out. I want to be there because only there, when I'm there, can I actually see you break through. God is saying, no, come with me. I'm in the Jordan. It doesn't look like the place you want to be in. It doesn't look like the place where you're going to see breakthrough. But I invite you in because I am here. All that matters is who is with you in the place. And then it wasn't a go find the highest rock and jump into the Jordan River and you're going to be hundreds, climb out and you're good to go. So go and wash 7 times in the Jordan. And you may have said, yes, God, I believe you. I will do it. I will go. And you're there and you're washing. It's like, I still have leprosy. You come out. Still have leprosy. God says, I said, go again. Go again. Come out. Can you go again? Can you go again? Can you trust him again? seven times? Can you keep trusting him? Can you persist? Can you trust him that maybe on the seventh time you'll see it? You'll see his goodness manifest. You will hear the words, "I am willing, be clean." From a corporate church point of view, I really want to say we are embarking on just the most exciting journey ever. The Cornubia story. If you're not aware, we are moving. We're moving. We're moving to Cornubia. Surprise if you didn't know that. But we might say, but this is such a perfect river. So good here. There's so many reasons to be here. I want to say, if I want to go where God is. I want to go where God, his presence is going. We are seeing him move. How dare we stay? And so we're inviting you on a journey to go with him, to go even when it doesn't make any sense. It's just like, but this can't be. These rivers are better. There's so many reasons why we should do this. Actually, God says, no, well, this is where my presence is. This is where my call is. The other thing I wanted to share was that as I was preparing, from a corporate sense, that Joshua 3, Moses, there was a time where there was a leader, a significant leader in the history of God's people, and he had to lead them through a body of water to take them towards God's inheritance for them. And I feel that we're an old church, and many people in the church, possibly more so, well, definitely more so in the morning congregation, but they would refer back to the Moses and the Red Sea. And they would say, while God has done so much amazing stuff in this church in our past, and they will keep referring to God took us through the Red Sea. He saved us from slavery. But actually, we get to be a part of a Joshua generation. And God is going to do it again, and he's going to stop the waters, and he's going to part the waters, and he's going to say, now go get your inheritance. We, in this room, get to be a part of this generation where we get to see God do it again. And not just taking us out of slavery, but taking us into an inheritance. It's a better story. And so, we invite you in on the story. This is what God is doing. We want to be in his river. His river, no matter what. No matter what it looks like to our natural eyes, we want to be in the river that he's in. What makes him willing tonight? What makes him willing? What makes him say, you know the attitude of the homeless guy in our car? When he's entitled and he's kind of taking advantage and he's like, I deserve this. It kind of makes you unwilling. Hey. But there is a way that we can position ourselves before God. Well, actually, he has compassion on us, and he says, I'm willing, be clean. Who wants to hear those words tonight? It could be a medical issue. It could be a spiritual issue. It could be a social issue, maybe your relationships. And it could be an economic issue. It could be a job thing. It could be a finance thing. God wants to heal us. He wants to pull the strings. He wants to bring order and balance and shalom and wholeness in every area of our lives. What are you trusting for today? What do you want him to make clean? But what makes him willing? Number one is humility. Number two is submission to his will. That regardless, God, your will be done because your will is more perfect than my will. Submit our will to his will. Number three is persistence. Keep trusting. Keep believing that he is good and that he is faithful. And lastly, follow him. Don't follow your good ideas. Follow him. God, where are you? I'm coming. Can we stand, please? And I ask if you have a spiritual issue that you want to take care of tonight. If you've never come to Jesus and said, Jesus, if you're willing, make me clean. Take take everything I've done wrong, take my rebellion, take my distance from you, I've ignored you my whole life. I trust you today. Make me clean. Make me clean. If you want to come to Jesus, you've never come to him before, you want to respond to the mercy and the grace of Jesus tonight, knowing that you don't deserve it, but man, he is so good and so full of love for you, and so committed to your wholeness and your healing and your salvation. And you want to respond to that goodness tonight. You want Jesus tonight. Won't you lift your hand? I'd love to pray for you.